You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Or did I talk to the time pilot?
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Hey everyone, welcome to Let's Get Civical.
This is the podcast that breaks down politics, government structure, and dives into the context of current events, but in a super fun way. I'm Lizzie Stewart, comedian, feminist, and political junkie.
And I'm Arden Walentowski, former Senate intern, campaign staffer, and political strategist.
In this episode, we're talking about the Star Spangled Banner.
So grab your 2-foot stars.
And let's get civical. I'm not, we can't do the whole thing. That would be horrific. That would be so horrific. Although I was thinking about it, and did you ever see the video of Fergie singing the national anthem at it was a basketball, like, all-star game?
No.
Okay, everybody, do yourself a favor and just look up Fergie Basketball Star Spangled Banner. It is one of the worst and best renditions of the Star Spangled Banner you have ever seen. And I love it. It's we should adopt it as, like, how we sing it. So I'll send that to you and perhaps even post it on our Instagram channel. So go take a look. But I mean, there's no segue to that. I gave away what we're talking about
from the opening moment,
which we, I guess I should say, welcome back to Let's Get Civical. I'm Lizzie Stewart.
And I'm Arden Walentowski.
And, you know, we nail the intro every time.
Yeah.
Every single time.
At least you're the one who remembers. You start it. Like, you always do the intro. So if we don't do the intro, I don't remember. It's, like, not a thing on my brain.
Right. We really rarely start off on theme.
It's true.
You know, we almost always start off, like, somewhere else and somehow, through the use of a map, find our way to the episode topic. But I don't even know how you don't just, like, start singing the Star Spangled Banner.
No, when you're going to talk about the Star Spangled Banner.
We love a musical number. Hello.
Mm-hmm.
So anywho, today, I mean, we're just treating you guys to a sweet, sweet full episode about the national anthem herself.
And so when you suggested the Star Spangled Banner, I was like, cool. Yeah, that sounds good. And then started researching it, and it's just one of those topics that, like, you know the song,
mm-hmm.
you know, but, like, it was so full of, like, good information.
Ooh, and, like, twists and turns
and, like, down a rabbit hole, like, because obviously the Star Spangled Banner is about the flag, mm-hmm. but, like, it's not just about, like, the flag. It's about, like, a very specific flag that was flying.
Sure.
And I had no idea about that story. And yeah. I had no idea that, like, that specific flag, like, is still around. Like, there's a
whole... Oh, it's still fully alive.
It's still fully alive. I had no idea. So I this was, like, a gift that kept on giving today when I was doing
that.
Research.
Mm-hmm. I love that for you. Yeah, I know a little. I can know a couple fun facts about the Star Spangled Banner, but it's also one of those things where I feel like I'm going to be surprised and delighted at every point in this episode recording.
Yeah.
Because I think people want to write it off because we know the words mm-hmm. and we know Francis Scott Key. Great name, by the way.
Right.
That's it. You know, like, we don't need to learn anything else. But I'm like, I think there's so much more to uncover.
There's so much more to uncover, not the least of which, and I didn't put in the full lyrics in the notes because, my God, it's actually very long. It's like five stanzas, like, or five whatever sections.
It is quite long, like the actual thing.
Yeah, like, we only ever sing the first part.
We made some cuts internally, which I do think was the right move.
I think so.
But I guess before we get into it, do you want to talk about today's Saoirse Ronan Sources?
Of course. Today's Saoirse Ronan Sources. There's a lot of them. The Library of Congress.
Mm.
Multiple, like, sites or pages or whatever from the National Park Service, which is not a site I expected to find a lot of information
But they
from.
Do this. They but do they this do where this they have shit. They have this information. They mm-hmm. they house information about stuff that has nothing to do with parks, and you're like, okay, NPS, go off.
Yeah. They were very helpful. History.com.
Obviously.
Obviously. And a great article by Kate Linberry from Smithsonian Magazine, which was, like, full of information about the actual flag. Like, the specific flag, not the American flag in general. Like, super great article. Yeah.
Love, love, love.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you guys ready to, oh, say, can you see what this episode is all about? Let's jump on in to the basics. So these notes are coming from the National Park Service. The U.S. National Anthem and the flag that inspired it are legacies of, you guessed it, the War of 1812, where British forces gathered to attack Baltimore in September of 1814. So this whole thing started in Baltimore, where we are in the middle of the War of 1812. Mm-hmm. Weirdly, now the year is 1814, so maybe we should have figured out a different name for the war that wasn't so year specific. I was like, I love the War of 1812 because I think that they were ambitious and they're like, we're going to wrap this up in 1 year.
Oh, yeah. We can get her done.
Boom, boom. In and out. 1 year. Boom, bada bing. After a 25-hour bombardment of Fort McHenry, they failed to penetrate Baltimore's defenses and withdrew. So this is the British. They are knock-knocking and ding-donging mm-hmm. on Fort McHenry.
Boom-booming.
Boom, 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 boom. I want you in my room so we can play together. Now and okay. Whatever.
It's a great song.
Delusional. I have one brain cell left. She's hanging out by a thread.
You're doing amazing.
Yeah. They're trying to get Baltimore. They're trying to get this fort. And this is what I love about war, early war, is the fact that cannons aren't working. Like, we can't get through to the fort. I think that's hysterical that there was once a time where we just couldn't get through a wall,
mm-hmm.
no matter how hard we tried or how hard the enemy tried, in this case, the British. So Baltimore, bombs are bursting all around us. The Americans are hanging in there. Francis Scott Key witnessing the bombardment and seeing a huge 30 by 42 foot American flag over the garrison was moved to write four stanzas of lyrics to a popular tune of the day. First of all, 30 by 40 foot flag is huge.
It's gigantic. We're going to talk about it, but it's gigantic. I also I love that the bombs are falling. He's looking at the flag and most people would be like, I gotta reconnoiter.
Get out of here.
I could die. I gotta get out of here.
Die at any moment.
He was being basically held hostage by the British, but
my
brain would not go to, you know what I should do?
I have to write this down.
The spirit is moving me. I need to write a poem.
Yeah.
No.
And honestly, and you know what? While I'm here, I'm just going to put it to music and see how it goes.
Yeah. Just, we're just going to see how it goes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, Francis. Okay. Both the flag and the anthem have become known as the Star Spangled Banner. Ba ba da 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 ba.
Yeah.
We can't do more than one musical episode per year or our listeners will stop listening to us.
Just all singing.
Guys, I will try to get a lid on it, but I'm telling you, it's been a long week and it is Tuesday. Oh, so God. Let's go.
Oh my God, there's 10 days left in this week for you.
Woo!
Woohoo! Okay, a little bit about Francis Scott Key. I mean, we all know the name. We know him. We kind of like him. He was a prominent lawyer in Frederick, Maryland and in Washington, D.C., and he made his name in 1807 by defending Justice Eric Bullman. Justice is like a name. J-U-S-T-U-S, not a judge.
Not like a, yeah.
Just to clarify. So Justice Eric Bullman and Samuel Swartout, who had been charged with treason in connection to an alleged conspiracy designed by Aaron Burr.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Why couldn't Aaron just literally settle down? I've talked about this once. I've talked about this 1,000 times where it's like every time we turn the page of time back and we look at this period in history, we always discover Aaron Burr just involved in some shit.
He's popping off. He's doing something crazy. He's trying to get other people to do crazy shit with him.
Yeah. It's like, absolutely relax.
Yeah. Both the Star Spangled Banner and the song written about it are chained to the institution of slavery.
Perfect, as we all are.
Mm-hmm. Francis Scott Key defended and participated in the institution of slavery, and his personal ownership of other human beings stands opposed to his definition of the United States as land of the free.
National Park Service is not holding back.
No.
That's what I love, is that we're still on the National Park Service, and they're like, you know what, Francis Scott Key, what's that? Smells like a hypocrite. You know what I mean? you see? Okay.
Right. By the dawn's early light that you were a slave owner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The third verse of the song mentions that, quote, no refuge could save the hireling and slave, close quote.
No.
I know. It's not clear what Key intended this line to mean, and he could have been referring to the foreign troops serving with the British, or perhaps the escaped enslaved men that comprised the British colonial marines, which we've talked about before, because the British were like, if you are an escaped slave or, you know what, if you want, like, come join the British and you can be free.
Yeah.
So just a little bit about Francis. And of course, he's an amateur poet.
And of course, but of course he has a hobby.
Right.
And of course we put him on a pedestal. Mm-hmm. I love to see it. Okay. Let's talk about how we got from the bombing of Fort McHenry, Francis Scott Key writing a poem on what I can only imagine to be like the wall of the prison he was in.
I know. Like, did he have paper? I don't understand.
You know what? I feel like they did, because in this time, like, it was, you know, if you were
kind of will to do. They'd be like, yes, here's some parchment in your cell, and you can write to your families. It was like normal, I think, to provide parchment. Mm. Or he wrote it on the dirt. I don't know. But how did we get from there to it being the literal national anthem of this country? So this stuff is coming from history.com and again, the National Park Service. After one of Key's friends, Dr. William Beans, was taken prisoner by the British, Key went to Baltimore, located the ship where Beans was being held, and negotiated his release. However, they weren't allowed to leave until after the British bombardment of Fort McHenry. He wasn't like a real prisoner. He was just you have to stay inside until tomorrow.
Right, because now that he knew what the British were doing, they weren't going to let him go so that he could go, like, help people. They were like, you know, not that they were going to, like, hurt him or, like, keep him prisoner, but they were just like, just until the fight's done, and then you can go home.
Right.
Key watched the bombing campaign unfold from aboard a ship located about 8 miles away. After that day, the British were unable to destroy the fort and gave up. Surrender.
Bye.
Said bye. We can't do it anymore. Bye. So this was a real turning point for the War of 1812.
Yeah.
Even though it was happening in 1814. Key was relieved to see the American flag still flying over Fort McHenry and quickly penned a few lines in tribute to what he had witnessed. The poem was printed in newspapers and eventually set to music. By 1899, the U.S. Navy officially adopted the use of the Star Spangled Banner for its formal ceremonies.
Mm-hmm.
People began referring to the song as the Star Spangled Banner, and in 1916, enemy of the show, President Woodrow Wilson, announced that it should be played at all official events. So it does not surprise me that who else other than my arch nemesis, Woodrow Wilson, had a hand to play in the game of the Star Spangled Banner.
I know.
Then in 1918, it made its debut in the world of sports as it was performed at Game 1 of the World Series in Chicago. So that's the real turning point, I think, is when Chicago, probably the Cubs, I would imagine, were like, let's play it here at the World Series.
The World Series. And they started, they started it.
Yeah.
Now they played at like every event.
Yeah.
Every sports event.
Sure is. Because nothing says America like sports.
Mm-hmm.
That same year, so 1918, Maryland Congressman J. Charles O.
Linthicum?
It's a hard one, y'all.
That's a hard one. There's no like hints there. There's nothing.
Too many eyes. So Charles introduced the first of 6 bills to make the Star Spangled Banner the official anthem of the United States. Then, kind of a significant amount of time later, on March 3rd, 1931, so gosh, 10, 11 years? Wait, 20? What's the math? 11. 13, since 1918.
Yeah. Oh, I think you need to go to bed.
Okay, 13 years after it was introduced, President Herbert Hoover signed into law House Resolution 14, which made the Star Spangled Banner the national anthem. So it's been the national anthem for a long time.
A long time, 90 years.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It is pretty wild.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the lyrics, like,
tell me.
We're not gonna talk about all. We're not gonna read it. We can post a thing on social media about it. But like, it's you know, it's poetry. It's long. It's he's watching the flag. Really, the opening stanza is like the really like get you in the heart stanza. Mm-hmm. That's why we sing it. But over time, various people and movements like added a stanza to the national anthem and to like, you know, support what they were fighting for.
Mm-hmm.
So throughout the 19th century, the Star Spangled Banner remained the most prominent air used by Americans to express their patriotism. But early on, Americans began to use the song as a means of political expression.
Go off?
Mm-hmm. In the decade leading up to the Civil War, abolitionists added a new verse to the song to promote their cause to bring an end to slavery in the United States. So too did the temperance movement amend the lyrics of the Star Spangled Banner to promote their efforts to curb the use of alcohol and bring an end to the social ills and abuses related to it. I really want to find that.
We've got to find how they altered it.
I want to find it. I want to like put it on a pillow.
Yeah. And just have it. It framed.
Yeah. I want it.
It's like when you think about the lyrics of the Star Spangled Banner, it's like, where are you gonna weave in alcohol to this?
Oh, say, can you see that bottle of rum? It will make, like, I can't even, so crazy.
But I love that they used all the tactics that were available them. They're like, we're going to change the Star Spangled Banner and that's going to get them to stop drinking.
Right.
You watch.
You watch. This is going to be it. This is the ringer. Its frequent use during the Civil War and by U.S. veterans groups in the late 19th century established the Star Spangled Banner as a standard for patriotic celebrations.
Sure.
Yeah.
They're like, oh my God, is this a patriotic event? Should we play the Star Spangled Banner?
You guys, should we or should we not? Or should we?
Yeah, it's like being at an eighth grade dance and being like, mm-hmm. should we play the cha-cha slide?
Oh my God, cha-cha.
Now that we're all gathered and we're 14, should we do the cha-cha slide?
Take it back now, y'all.
Yeah.
I love that song.
I mean, it's a genius song.
It's so good.
The cha-cha slide should be the national anthem.
It should be. Oh my God. Two hops this time. Burr, burr. I love it.
It's amazing.
We're going to take a quick break for a little word from our sponsors. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's talk about, okay, so we've alluded to this a couple of times where there is the lyrics, the poem that Sweet Little Frances wrote, and then there's the tune, which Sweet Little Frances did not write the music to go with the song. The music already existed, right?
Yes, yes, yeah, the music okay. existed.
Yes, yeah. The music, like literally the tune, the
okay,
not a
girl.
Frances original. Not no. a Frances original.
No.
So these notes are coming from the Library of Congress, and we're going to talk about the tune a little bit, where we got the big old bop, beady bop, beep bop, you know? Okay, here we go. Sorry, this opening line is hysterical. I didn't it's know great. This was even a legend. I love this.
I didn't know either, but I was like, you know what? Now I know, and I got to put it
now
in
Now we
there.
Know.
Yeah.
So if you didn't know that there's this legend, but there is little basis for the legend that the tune of our national anthem was an old English drinking song. So rumors are not true.
Not
it was not
true.
A drinking song, despite mm-mm. what everything about U.S. tells us.
Mm-hmm. It would have been very us to write a song.
Yeah.
To.
Absolutely.
Drinking lyrics.
Absolutely. On the other hand, there is strong evidence that the members of the club for which the music was originally composed, the. Oh my God.
I know.
Anacreonic Society?
I think so, yeah.
The Anacreonic Society frequently lifted not only their voices, but also their cups in song.
Yeah.
So they're drunks. They're drunks and they sing. And we love that. So, I mean, I just said a name of a society that I'm sure nobody knew existed. The Anacreonic Society. Who are they? They were a popular gentlemen's club in London named in honor of Anacreon.
Yeah, good job.
Anacreon, a lyric poet of Greece. The society's patron saint was Anacreon, and they were called the convivial bard of Greece. So, secret society, gentlemen's club, the things we love to see.
Mm-hmm.
They exist in London. It's this old-ass club. Their mascot is a bard. And a bard being like a poet of Greece. And they came up with this song that they sang while drinking. And the tune of that song is
the tune of the Star Spangled Banner.
Tune of the Star Spangled Banner.
It's really wild.
Okay, one more note about the Anacreonic Society. The society's membership, one observer noted, was dedicated to, quote, wit, harmony, and the god of wine. Get a bunch of losers. Okay.
I know.
The lyrics to their drinking song were written by Mr. Tomlinson, who had been the president of the society. So they wrote their drinking song.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Tomlinson wrote the lyrics to it. Then we took the tune, not the lyrics, just the tune of that drinking song. And that is the tune of the national anthem.
Yeah.
The Star Spangled Banner. More fun facts about the tune. First published in England, the tune appeared in North America before the end of the 18th century, where, as it happened, new lyrics, including, quote, Adams and Liberty and, quote, Jefferson and Liberty, were written. The song's appeal may have been due at least in part to its unique metrical structure, which I don't know. Music. But I'm assuming that means something to somebody who does.
Yes.
You know? So
I mean, I get what the meter is. I don't understand, I guess, like what is so particular about the Star Spangled Banner that makes it unique, but yeah. I don't know music.
Not found in any other songs of the period, its striking meter may have been what attracted Francis Scott Key. By all accounts, oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I know. Drag him.
Okay. By all accounts, tone deaf, Key had already composed one other poem using the meter of the Anacreonic song when he wrote The Star Spangled Banner. So, hold on. We're uncovering some truths here. The first one being Francis Scott Key, completely tone deaf.
Tone deaf.
The second one being, this was not his first rodeo with this tune.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote another song.
Yeah.
I want to hear the other song.
I want to know what it was about.
Somewhere. I want to know what it was about.
I know. Like, you know, are you like farmland? Are we like riding off into the sunset? Or, yeah. Like, I want to know what it was about.
Oh, wait. I think I know. Here we go. As early as 1806, Francis Scott Key adapted the tune to an earlier poem he wrote entitled When the Warrior Returns. In honor of an American naval victory over the Barbary Pirates.
The pirates are back!
They're back!
They're back!
Oh no!
We're surprised by pirates in our show.
Man, more pirates. We really don't seek the pirates out. They find us.
They find us. They really do.
Hence, there's no doubt that Key was well acquainted with the tune when in September of 1814, he saw the flag over Fort McHenry, quote, by the dawn's early light, end quote. Soon after the battle, the poem and the tune were published, a reminder of the American victory. My God. It's like what National Park Service and the Library of Congress aren't saying is Francis knew one tune.
Uh-huh.
And he would have kept writing songs to the same tune.
He was a one-trick pony.
He's a one-trick pony.
And it just so happens that this pony, like, took off.
He's a literal one-hit. He's, like, the first one-hit wonder.
Yeah.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
The law establishing the Star Spangled Banner as the national anthem did not specify an official text or musical arrangement, but left room for creative arrangements and interpretations of the Star Spangled Banner, hence Fergie's performance at the All-Star basketball game.
Oh my God, I gotta watch it.
The standard instrumental version was unofficially established as the arrangement used by U.S. service bands. However, other versions include Igor Stravinsky's 1941 version for the orchestra and male chorus, Duke Ellington's 1948 Cornell University arrangements, Jimi Hendrix's 1969 electric guitar version, and the 1991 version by the St. Louis Symphony under Leonard Slatkin. I mean, there's so many arrangements.
Yeah, so add Fergie to that list.
Hell yeah.
Library of Congress. Okay, so that's basically the song. Like, we know where she came from, the lyrics and the tune. Francis Scott Key is watching this flag as they're being hit. You know, the British are trying to destroy Fort Henry unsuccessfully, and he's painting this whole poetic picture and blah, blah, blah. But the whole point is that he's watching the flag, and this is... I mean, I guess if you had asked me, like, I guess I knew that there was an actual flag. I didn't realize that it was like a real
flag,
a real event where like somebody had seen a flag. Kind of thought that like maybe somebody was sitting on their porch, like watching.
It was
the
a metaphorical flag.
Like I didn't realize it was like an actual thing. So this whole rabbit hole was like super interesting to me because. When you talk about the Star Spangled Banner, obviously it's the song, but it's also obviously the flag.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about the flag that was there at Fort McHenry. So the Star Spangled Banner's history starts not with Francis Scott Key, but a year earlier with Major George Armistead, the commander of Fort McHenry. I should say this is all coming from the great Smithsonian article by Kate Linberry. So this is Major George Armistead. Knowing that his fort was a likely British target, Armistead told the commander of Baltimore defenses in July 1813 that he needed a flag. A big one.
Wait.
I know.
Never mind the guns. Give me your biggest flag.
Give me your biggest flag.
Absolutely. Said, I see exactly where he's coming from.
Oh, yeah.
Intimidation is everything.
Oh, fuck yeah. Oh, yeah. You got a big flag? Ain't nobody coming near you.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, quote, "We, sir, are ready at Fort McHenry to defend Baltimore against invading by the enemy, except that we have no suitable ensign to display over the Star Fort. And it is my desire to have a flag so large that the British will have no difficulty in seeing it from a distance." This is big dick energy. This man is like...
I want them to know where we are.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that they can find us at the quickest available route.
Right.
Yeah. Let's actually... I would take the fort to them if I could.
Right. I would move it. I can't. Yeah. So we instead...
So give me a flag.
Give me a flag. Armistead soon hired a 29-year-old widow and professional flag maker, Mary Young Pickersgill. I know. 29 widow and professional flag maker.
Yes, she had a job. Hi, Lizzie Stewart, widow and professional flag maker at your service.
I know. What an intro. Oh, my God. I love it. Mary. Like, why put in widow? Like, you don't need to know that. That's not relevant to her flag making.
It's important. No, because a married woman couldn't have made a flag of this size.
Mm.
This flag has widow energy.
Yeah. If she was married, she would probably have too many children to make a flag this big.
Exactly.
So the professional flag maker, her name was Mary Young Pickersgill of Baltimore. She was hired to make a garrison flag measuring 30 by 42 feet with 15 stars and 15 stripes, each star and stripe representing a state. A large flag, but not one unusual for the time.
Really?
I know. I mean, like,
it's a bunch of big flags.
We just, the land of big flags.
Jesus Christ. All right, go off.
I know. Go off. Over the next 6 weeks, Mary, her daughter, and three of Mary's nieces, a 13-year-old indentured servant, and possibly Mary's mother, Rebecca Young, worked 10-hour days sewing the flag using 300 yards of English wool bunting.
Yes. Okay. So it was a collective effort.
She did not sew it herself.
Herself. Sure.
She had willing help and also unwilling help.
Yep.
Because Mary also owned, this particular note is coming from the National Park Service. Again, correcting history. I really have some respect for the National Park Service. Mary also owned slaves who were instrumental in supporting the creation of the flag. An indentured servant named Grace Wisher physically stitched much of the banner by hand. So this bitch didn't even do it. She designed it and like project managed the situation. Yeah. She didn't do it. They made the stars each measuring 2 feet in diameter. That is large.
It's huge. That's a big star.
It's a big star. They made the stars 2 feet each in diameter from cotton, a luxury item at the time. Initially, they worked from Mary's home, which is now a private museum known as the Flag House.
Well, we have to go.
We have to go. That decides that. But as their work progressed, they needed more room and had to move to Claggett's Brewery across the street.
My God.
I know.
It wasn't like a church.
No.
They had to move.
We just have to go to the brewery.
I'm sorry. Hands are tied. We have to go to the brewery.
We have to go to the brewery. We have no other choice. Pick up the gigantic flag.
It's a large flag. That's hysterical.
Yeah. On August 19th, 1813, the flag was delivered to Fort McHenry. For making the Star Spangled Banner, Mary was paid $405.90. She received another $168.54 for sewing a smaller storm flag, which was 17 by 25 feet, likely using the same design. It was this storm flag, not the garrison flag, now known as the Star Spangled Banner, which actually flew during the battle. The garrison flag, according to eyewitness accounts, wasn't raised until the morning. So the small flag she made was what was actually up the flag.
Is what inspired Francis.
I think so. I think that's what they're saying. Yeah.
I mean, if it's the one that's up overnight, that's the flag.
That's the flag. Armistead remained in command of Fort McHenry for the rest of his life. Armistead is the guy who was like, get me a flag.
Yes.
Historians are not sure how the Armistead family came into possession of the flag, but upon Armistead's death in 1818, his wife Louisa inherited it. So this family is just like, it's ours.
We'll take the flag. But I also like that this is so funny. So the note of like Armistead being in charge of Fort McHenry for the rest of his life, and the rest of his life is 4 years.
4 years.
I was like, oh my God, this is like, what, he was there for 10, 20 years? Literally 4 years, and then he died, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
A military death and or disease. But regardless, it's like, yeah, the flag is still in his possession. It's still, it's only been 4 years. The flag hasn't left the premises.
Right. So he dies. His wife inherits it. They think it is Louisa, the wife, who is thought to have sewn a red upside down V on the flag, beginning the stitches for the letter A for Armistead. She's just fully claiming this flag, which
God. Louisa.
Federal property, but like Louisa going after it.
Way to ruin a good thing.
I know, right? She is also thought to have begun the tradition of giving pieces of the flag away to honor her husband's memory. Like, bitches, this is your flag.
Stop cutting up the flag.
Stop cutting up the flag.
We worked hours on this. This is a national monument, and we can't keep it intact because you can't stop cutting it up.
No.
Oh, God.
Who are
you? I'm not a fan of Louisa. I don't know what her deal was.
I agree. So she was giving away pieces to honor her husband's memory, as well as the memories of the soldiers who defended the fort under his command. When Louisa died in 1861, she passed the flag down to their daughter, Georgiana Armistead Appleton. What a name. Like, that is the most, like, English-American name.
Yeah, not a lot of Georgianas left. Or Georgianas?
No. Georgianas?
Is it Georgiana?
I don't know. Georgiana. I don't know. Georgiana.
Could be either.
It could be. I like Georgiana better than Georgiana. So that's why I chose that version.
Love that.
I don't know what her name was actually, how it was pronounced. So when Louisa died, she gave it to Georgiana over legal objections from their son. Fighting over this flag.
It's my flag.
My flag.
No, it's my flag. I love it.
I want the flag.
I love us.
Mm-hmm.
People are dying. Let's go. It's like about to be the Civil War. Come on.
Come on. Come on.
Get focused.
Several of the cuttings from the Star Spangled Banner have been located over the years, including about a dozen that are owned by the American History Museum.
Oh my God.
There are about a dozen more pieces in various museums and private collections, but a missing 15th star has never been found. So check your basements, check your cupboards.
Let me know if you find a star.
If you find a 2-foot cotton star, may be in luck. Huge. According to Kathleen Kendrick, who is the curator for the Star Spangled Banner Preservation Project, there's a legend that the star was buried with one of the soldiers from Fort McHenry. There's another legend that says it was given to Abraham Lincoln, but no real evidence has surfaced to support these stories, and the true fate of the star remains one of the Smithsonian's greatest unsolved mysteries.
Yeah, I feel like Abe doesn't have it.
No. Somebody would have found it.
Also, it's like it's too late. Like, it's nobody gave it to Abe.
No.
Like, nobody, because Abe's, like, legacy wasn't fully even realized by the time he was assassinated. It's not like they gave him the star because he's the Abraham Lincoln we know today.
Right.
At that point, he was still just kind of head of the Union and half the country hated him. Like,
right.
You know?
Yeah. And if
Abe doesn't have it, I bet it's buried with someone.
I bet it is too. Because if Abe had it when he was assassinated, they would have gone through all of his stuff. They would have been like, oh, look, here's that star.
Here's the star.
Where's Mary? Give it to Mary. Mary, go sew this back on.
Yeah. But since Louisa couldn't stop cutting up the flag for people who served
at Fort McHenry, yeah.
It's with them.
Yeah. After Georgiana's death, the flag passed to Eben Appleton, Armistead's grandson, who loaned it to the city of Baltimore for the 1880 sesquicentennial for the 1880 what?
I hate that word. Oh my God.
I know.
Sesquicentennial? No.
Yeah, no. For the 1880 sesquicentennial celebration, it then remained in a safe deposit vault in New York City until Appleton loaned it to the Smithsonian in 1907. And then 5 years later, he made the permanent gift of giving the flag to the Smithsonian. So it kind of like just sat there for a really long time.
Yeah.
And then the Smithsonian eventually got it and they had it for a long time. The Smithsonian hired Amelia Fowler, an embroidery teacher and well-known flag preserver in
Go off, Amelia, you well-known black preserver, you.
How do you become known for that? Like, a well-known, who, like, and the way they talk about, like, the professional flag maker, well-known flag preserver.
1914. It was a big thing. Lots of flags.
But, like, it makes me feel like I should know somebody who does flags.
Well, women used to sew. And that's what we forget, is that, like, that was one of the three things we were allowed to do, is sew.
Babies cook, sew.
Yep.
Yeah.
In that order.
Mm-hmm. So the Smithsonian hired Amelia Fowler in 1914 to replace the canvas backing that had been added in 1873, probably because it was falling apart because these people kept cutting it up.
Too many holes. They're like, we gotta put something here. This thing is just gonna disintegrate.
It's gonna be a flag in 80 pieces. For the next 50 years, with the exception of a brief move during World War II, the Star Spangled Banner was displayed in what is now the Arts and Industries Building at the Smithsonian. Mm-hmm. The new National Museum of History and Technology, which is now known as the National Museum of American History, became the new home for the flag, and they had space to allow the flag to hang kind of freely, because when it was at the Smithsonian, it was like the way that they hung it, you couldn't ever see the whole thing.
The whole big flag,
because it's huge. They didn't have the space. So now when the National, the American History Museum got it, they were able to, like, hang it properly. The Star-Spangled Banner remained in Flag Hall from 1964 until 1999, when it was moved to the Conservation Lab. Nearly two centuries later, the flag that inspired Key still survives, though fragile and worn by years. To preserve this American icon, experts at the National Museum of American History completed an 8-year conservation treatment with funds from Polo Ralph Lauren.
Yeah.
I almost took that out, but I was like, that's hilarious. No. I love that note.
Aren't they the ones that dress the Olympians in those god awful outfits? The American U.S. Olympians.
Yeah.
So yeah, I get why Ralph Lauren would donate to the flag being restored.
Yeah. So money from Ralph Lauren, the Pew Charitable Trusts, and thank God, the U.S. Congress.
Sure.
Yeah.
Gotta throw some money over there.
Yeah.
It's the flag. Yeah.
Yeah. So they fixed it up, and that's still where she is. But, like, eight years it took. But I had no idea that there was, like, a literal
flag
from the actual day.
Flag.
That, like, still existed.
It's crazy that it still exists and that it's not, like, lost to history.
Yeah.
That would be more realistic to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, this flag is up there. We gotta go, obviously. I mean, we have to do a whole trip just on the Smithsonian. There's so much in the Smithsonian museums to see.
Yeah.
That I think my head will just explode when I do finally go there and take a look at all of our stuff.
I know. It's going to be so exciting. You know?
But that is our episode on the Star Spangled Banner, y'all. So we hope you enjoy that. Happy anniversary month to the Star Spangled Banner being put on parchment by Sir Francis Scott Key. Don't know if he's actually a sir, but seems like it. And in the meantime, we love you so, so much. And if you like what you heard, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Let's Get Civical. You can rate us, you can review us, you can subscribe to us. We love you so, so much, and we will see you next Wednesday.
Goodbye.